Labour Minister when we started SATU in 1990, and you taught us.
Minister, Minister, is in
okay. We'll take the point of order from the chairperson of the court of
appeal.
We're reflecting up.
Can I just, Minister? We will start at We'll start in the next 5 minutes. I don't know what's happening here. For it's my first experience. There's not a single member of the portfolio committee in this meeting. So, oh, there is the background. I don't know what has happened. So we'll start in the next 5 minutes. They are trickling in. It's only Mr. Baygram now. And myself for now.
I had a bit of difficulty, but thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael. Thank you. I want my chocolate.
Yeah, I think I've eaten that one. I'll have to get you another one.
Korea then. Or you are afraid that you must disclose.
I like chocolates. I can't not eat them.
You will be accused that you are bribing the chair.
Yeah, and you report me.
So, Minister, we'll start in the next 5 minutes, please.
That's fine. I was going to propose to Mr. Baker that through your chair that you accompany some members accompany us to inspect the farms which are not complying with the labor laws. But I'm afraid of the separation of powers. That's what I'm afraid of. I'll be messing that up. But I'll see how to
manage. We'll talk about it later. Let me just check what's happening here.
Okay.
Molo, Comrade Minister.
Hey, Comrade Minister.
Makala, what is your name? Makala, Minister. Sale call. then another guy came and said, sorry, ma'am, sorry. Mr. So-and-so, we are told there's a guy from Parliament which is outside. I said, I'm the guy. I said, oh, sorry, ma'am. I said, no, fine. So everybody. And I saw my former colleagues that were in the administration in Dora that are waiting there. The one said, gosh, when we were told that it's you that is outside, I said, oh my God. I said, I'm still a shop steward even now. But it was very... Come again.
We are happy that you managed to go and see for yourself.
Yes, I did. Go eat your quarter. By quarter past six, each two is almost that long. And I was told something that is happening outside that I'm not going to tell you here. I will tell the servant minister outside this meeting. I think now we can start. If Honorable Baygram and Honorable Nensele are here, I understand the...
How far did you have been talking to the link to Honorable Makubele or something? Sorry, Chair.
Okay. No, that was a moment in the bazaar. So, Kal, Advocate Mutibi, please tell me we'll start in the next 4 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, some of Bonaparte TV. Great. Serious look. But Zulu, who vile as analyst is let him look at Parliament. Mami Mamele morning lad. Mamele morning lad. Has he book of Aburas Mukeka Rash Banbat and what other white guy? No. Ukatina sijonge pokotho zethu yelo nto singani oversight yozo sabho so yipokho nani mamela I call your confidence that isabelo zakono wababa bakhandi yena lamalungu alele bayalala kaloku abantu yabona ke mina I'm a former health worker and bakusekuse nabantu bamba yakhani sizawuphosa sizini. Oh, no. Advocate,
don't worry.
I know your picture says it all. Honorable Mugabe, how are you?
Yes, I'm good, my chair.
Abengakababoni
nje angazi.
I'm not sure, Jay.
Honourable members, Minister, Deputy Minister, I will assume that the DG is here, and on advocate, please, I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing it correctly. We are now going to start. Just to remind, to recap, we requested. Let me rephrase. We circulated the invite last year, but because of the pressure of work from SIU. Remember, I'm a health worker. At times I lend to upside down from SIU. And then they requested that we see them this year, which for me it was fine, because we didn't want to put them under pressure. We know that they are dealing with quite huge issues in the country. We are happy that we are seeing them today, happy that they've honored our invitation. And just to recap and remind members, remember that we went to a joint oversight with SCOPA on the basis of what then, in fact, the SCOPA invited us to join them because of the report that they got from SCOPA. So we are happy also advocate and municipal that the department that we are oversighting and the ministry in particular is honoring your invitations when they are invited by SCOPA for them to receive the reports from you among others. They do honor those meetings of SCOPA. I think that without buying faces, I think that is where we are doing right. We must commend them. Even when they will then be not honoring who they've been on their case to us, only they're not honoring the meeting. Having said that, the meeting is open. Sorry for starting late because I couldn't start the meeting without members of the portfolio committee being around. We will then request Mr. Sakaza to quickly take us to roll call, and then from there we will then hand over to the minister just for a political overview, if there is one, and hand over to advocate to take us through their report. Over to you, Mr. Sakaza.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the members and to the ministry at large in the department, and also to the SIU. Chair, we've got from the Portfolio Committee, yourself, Chairperson of the Committee, Honorable Ndade, Honorable Nonsele, Honorable Ngabani, Honorable Makubele, and then we also have Honorable Bagram, Honorable Kado. I do get some messages, Chair, from other members that they are having connectivity problems. For instance, Honorable Kondo is also trying to get the link to WhatsApp, so I guess that is a problem. Chair, in terms of the apology, I received only Honorable Inanna, who is still on the listening from the committee staff. We've got myself, Poshia, and Debo Poche. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. The DG is not around in this meeting. I don't know who's leading this department. Honorable Minister, I'll hand over to you and then give over to Mr. Mutubi to just take us through and then subsequently present their report.
No, Chairperson, we are here, and then good morning to all. We are here just to listen to the presentation and take notes, and when we go, we can be able to say these are the issues which have been raised. If we have not implemented those issues, I don't think I should waste any time. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you, Minister. I'll hand over to you, Advocate Mutibi. You will then just briefly introduce your team, and then after that, you can then shoot. To presenting your report. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair, we appreciate the opportunity to come and present to this honorable committee. We also appreciate and are thankful for the indulgence that you've given us to reschedule the meeting from last year, December, to today. We are really thankful for that. I greet the Honourable Chair, Honourable Committee Members, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, and the Director General of the Department. I introduce my colleagues who are with me today. I'm joined by the spokesperson for the SIU, Mr. Kanyako. I'm also joined by the Chief National Investigations Officer, under whom this investigation is monitored, Mr. Leonard Lekheto, and the lead investigator in this investigation, Mr. Johnny Leroux. I'll then proceed straight to the presentation, Honorable Chair. I will share the presentation together with Mr. Leroux. I'll do some of the slides, and Mr. Leroux will take over when it comes to the investigative report itself. Next slide. Right. These are the table of contents. I'll be covering up to bullet number 4, and then Mr. Leroux will take over from bullet point number 5 up to the end. Okay. We thought it appropriate, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, to just outline quickly the legislative mandate of SIU, which the committee may well be aware of. I'll not spend a lot of time on that. Our enabling legislation that then regulates the work of the Special Investigating Unit is found in the Special Investigating Units and Special Tribunals Act, 74 of 1996. As we do our investigation, we're also guided where we find criminal evidence. We also look criminal law legislation, including Criminal Procedure Act. The act that regulates the investigation and defines corruption as an offense is the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act, number 12 of 2004. Those are some of the key legislation, but we do look at a myriad of legislations as we do respective investigations. Our major functions on the left hand side include investigation of corruption, malpractice and maladministration. We then institute civil proceedings where there's a need to cancel contracts, set them aside and recover monies that have been lost by the state. We, as SIU, we've got the powers in terms of our legislation. Those powers are really the powers that you would find in any of the investigation agencies. Powers to subpoena, session, seizure, interrogate witnesses under oath. And then, as I indicate, in the main, SIU institutes civil investigation to prevent, to recover losses and to prevent future losses. What is out of SIU's mandate is power to arrest. If there's a need to do that, we work closely with the Hawks and the SAPS. And on disciplinary actions, we do make referrals for disciplinary actions, and it will come out later, where we find that state officials made themselves guilty of misconduct. And our expectation then is that the accounting authorities or accounting officers take action based on our recommendation so that there can be the envisaged and the required consequence management. We work closely with other relevant agencies like SARS, FIC, where we really require assistance. Next slide. In terms of vision, of our vision, Honorable Chair, we would like SIU to be prepared and trusted anti-corruption, forensic investigation and litigation agency for the state. And we believe that we are on track in achieving this vision. Of course, we just have to make sure that we investigate effectively and bring out the required results. In terms of mission, we work closely with, we provide forensic investigation and civil litigation services to combat corruption, serious maladministration, and malpractices to protect the interests of the state and the public. We do work in terms of the values that are listed there. We put integrity at the center of what we do. Cooperation, teamwork, professionalism, efficiency, independence, drive and passion. That's what we expect from every one of our employees. And to date, we are really pleased to see that our work is driven based on those values. Next slide. These are the consequence management outcomes that the SIU seeks to achieve. As we present, these outcomes will be the ones that underlie the outcomes that we seek to achieve. For example, if there's any process, state process, particularly procurement or any other process, that has been conducted irregularly, and the evidence points that out as we investigate, we then invoke the civil litigation process. We go to the special tribunal or the high court, but since the special tribunal inception, we are now using mainly the special tribunal to to then get any remedy that the state deserves, recover the funds that have been lost, and ensure that those that are responsible are held to account. And then we start for the second from the left, disciplinary referrals, when we find that in any of the processes that we're investigating, whether it's UIF process or any other process, there has been officials that have made themselves guilty of misconduct. We then take that evidence, we give it to the state institution, in this case the department, we hand it, we send it to the Director General as the accounting officer so that he can take action. And we do work closely with him or his colleagues so that as the SIU, because we investigated these processes, we then present our investigators serve as witnesses in those hearings, so that we can present the evidence that we found. In terms of our legislation, when we find evidence pointing to criminal action, we are then enjoined by the law to refer that to NPA, and we've been doing that. In some instances, we work closely with the folks, and especially in an environment like the Honorable Committee will hear later, that we initially started with the secondment. In fact, it's still going on as secondment. In that instance, we then work also closely with the folks. Then the cases can be opened immediately at the police stations and then the address. We of course pull NPA afterwards. When we now investigate under a proclamation, we then also refer to the NPA with a criminal action. We also refer some matters to other regulatory authorities such as SARS, as I said, FIC, and Competition Commission, and the others. So we drive our investigations such that we reach this outcome. Of course, these are the main ones. There's others that we probably read as dictated by the regulatory environment that we are investigating in. But these are the main outcomes. At the bottom, the systemic recommendations. Those are simply the recommendations that we do, because as a forensic investigation agency, what we also do is that when we investigate, we pick up inefficiencies, what has failed in the process or the business process, or what has failed on the part of the people failure that we pick up, and then we recommend to the state institutions in terms of improvement in their business process or risk management or their planning environment. So we do that on an ongoing basis, and that is mainly to help and assist that we prevent the same actions from taking place again. The next last slide that I am presenting is that, Honorable Chair, we thought it appropriate that we would just give the background to this Honorable Committee, that as we do our work and ultimately deliver on the SIU's legislative mandate, we have taken into account the following strategic focus areas. And this we did almost 2 or 3 years ago, when we kick-started our new strategy to ensure that we improve, number 8, turnaround times of investigation. And this is important, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, simply because we believe that the quick turnaround time, the quicker we complete our investigation, the quicker consequence management can result, and the quicker actions can be taken and improve the environment. We also monitor the implementation of SIU referrals and consequence management. We can only make impact if we ensure that the SIU referrals are monitored, implemented, action is taken, and in appropriate instances, criminal prosecution and civil litigation. We've also taken measures to accelerate civil litigation. At the time, we were envisaging to implement the special tribunal, and the president signed it into operation in 2019. We are really glad to see the special tribunal operating as it is and delivering the results that we envisaged. We also are busy reviewing the funding model, as the honorable committee may know, that we charge fees as we investigate in terms of our law, similar to what the Auditor General does. But we are currently in the process of reviewing our funding model with the National Treasury. Whenever that happens, next time we appear at the portfolio committee, will update. We also monitor and evaluate the impact of SIU objectives. That's what I said. We would like to make the impacts that the public expects of SIU, so that we can really contribute effectively in assisting government and the state to fight corruption and maladministration. We will be implementing targeted prevention and awareness campaigns. We believe that we need to contribute to the prevention of corruption, not just the reactive side, which is the investigation, reaching outcomes. We also want to contribute on the prevention. I indicate that we make systemic recommendations to state institutions to prevent the recurrence of corruption, malpractice, and maladministration. We would like to improve communications and stakeholder relations. We believe that through the lead of Mr. Kanyako, the communication to the public and stakeholder relations has really shown an improvement so that the public could understand the business of SIU and the impact thereof. Implementing corruption, maladministration, and malpractice data analytics. This is one of the new functions that we have implemented. The data that we collect during our investigation, we want that data to be of value to state institutions so that we can put it in a data analytics tool. We do the trend analysis. We do also the vulnerable assessment so that we can then go and present to government. We are also in the process improving SIU governance framework and improving all SIU operations enablement functions, introducing a new organizational and individual performance management system. We believe that through a performance-driven organization, this is what will enable us as SIU to meet the expectations of the public, of course, even of the public representatives such as the Honorable Committee. So we, based on all of this, we believe that we are in a position to drive all of these investigations to proper conclusion. I'm going to pause here, Honorable Chair, and then hand over to my colleague, Mr. John Ilru, who will take over and then introduce the investigations that we are busy with at the Department of Labor and Employment, in particular the Unemployment Insurance Fund and the test payment. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity. Over to you, Johnny.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Advocate Mr. Wilkins.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
So thank you very much, Advocate McKeeby. And I just want to also greet, if I may, the Honourable Chairperson, the Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, and the Director General of the Department, as well as Advocate McKeeby and all other members present. We'll start with the introduction. Thank you, Mr. Thank you very much. So, first of all, on the 22nd of August 2002, the Minister of Employment and Labour referred allegations to the SIU relating to the Unemployment Insurance Fund, or specifically relating to the TERS payments. The Minister also provided the SIU with the AGSA report, and the Minister requested the SIU to review this report and on findings relating to the TERS paid during the COVID-19 TERS payments. So during the review, it was determined that only the procurement of the awareness campaign fell within the ambit of the PPE Proclamation R23 of 2020, and what that effectively means is that the SIU could only use its powers to investigate that awareness campaign, and therefore we'll address the issues how we dealt with the other matters a bit later. So So in order for the SIU to attend to some of these audit findings, the SIU entered into a supposed agreement with the Department of Employment and Labour to secure further evidence in support of a motivation to motivate for a new proclamation. A motivation for a proclamation is currently with the Department of Justice for onward transmission to the Office of the President. The second agreement ended on the 15th of December 2020, and the head of the SIU then briefed the minister on progress on the 17th of December. An addendum to the agreement was then entered into, extending this agreement from 15th February 2021 to 14th May 2021. This presentation now covers matters investigated under the proclamation, as well as those investigated under the Spunkman Agreement. Thank you. So now we'll start with matters covered by the proclamation. And as indicated, that's related to the awareness campaign that fell squarely within the powers of the SIU and the proclamation. So the AGSA's findings suggested that no proper SEM process was followed to appoint at least 5 companies for the awareness campaign relating to this, and that these appointments were made based on the motivation of a sole service provider. The SIU commenced its investigation into the matter on the 24th of August 2020, and the value of these contracts amounted to 6.1 million. So here you'll see on this slide, Honourable Chair, that these are the RFQs and what the services were for. So first of all, at number one, you'll see there was a radio advertising campaign on a RFQ 2658. For the amount of 184,000 Rand. The radio advertising campaign RFQ 2565 for 899,000 Rand. The advertising campaign for 1.2 million Rand. Radio advertising campaign for 877,000. And then another radio advertising campaign for RFQ 2654 for 2.8 million, making up to 6.1 million for the 5 contracts. So the 5 service providers were required to conduct advertising campaign in order to create awareness about the UIF terms for a duration of 45 seconds for 3 spots a day for 4 weeks in their respective radio channels and related television channels. So the UIF's BAC, that's the Bid Adjudication Committee, requested for a deviation from the normal procurement process in order to appoint the service provider. All these service providers were appointed on a deviation. The SIU is conducting a full-scale investigation in order to confirm or to refute corruption, maladministration allegations, and or to determine if there were any undue benefits or gratification paid to the UIF officials to influence the process of the SEM. Thank you. So the investigation included the following. The SIU reviewed all the SEM-related documents, which included all the related contracts and invoices. Number two is the SIU reviewed all the relevant minutes and audio recordings of the 2 BAC meetings related to these appointments. We interviewed all the key UIF officials that dealt with the SEM process, and we obtained 14 affidavits from several UIF officials. Number six, the team interviewed the identified company directors related to the 5 service providers and obtained affidavits from some of them. The team reviewed specific personnel files and additional information or evidence. Furthermore, the SIU is continuing with the full lifestyle audit of all the persons of interest. Number nine, a sequence of events timeline was prepared for each of the 5 service providers, highlighting the irregular SEM process. We interviewed a representative of the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, commonly known as ICASA, who provided an affidavit and relevant information. We interviewed one official from the Government Communication and Information Systems, the GCIS, regarding similar requests from state institutions in the past. Number 12, the UIF failed to communicate their request to the awareness campaign with the GCIS due to the alleged urgency of the matter. The SEM department failed to source service providers on behalf of the communication and marketing department within the UIF, who conceded that they interpret, interpreted the term sole service provider incorrectly. The PAC requested for a deviation from the normal SEA process to appoint these five service providers. The communication and marketing department acknowledged that the appointments were irregular. Thank you, Leonard. So here was our summary of our findings. The five service providers were appointed without following the proper SEA process. Where relevant, practice note 8 of 2007 and 8 requires for all procurement of goods and services not exceeding 500,000 rand, at least 3 quotations must be obtained, which the UIF failed to do. The appointments were not in compliance with section 217, subsection 1 of the Constitution, as well as section 51(1)(a)(3) of the PFMA. The motivation for the use of sole service provider amounted to a misrepresentation due to the fact that there were several other commercial radio stations registered with ICASA in the respective provinces. Thank you, David. So furthermore, the SABC, a state-owned company, was able to deliver the same message through 11 languages. One SEM official failed in her duties when she allowed the marketing communication department to predetermine the names of the service provider. This failure resulted in an irregular expenditure for the UIF in the amount of 6.1 million. Recommendations, approval, appointments, and the payments of these service providers were therefore in contravention of section 51(a)(3) of the PFM. Thank you, Leonard. Now we get to the outcomes of the investigation, or at least the consequence management. So disciplinary referrals were then submitted or referred to the department on the 11th of December 2020. Charges have been brought against all these individuals. There were 7 of them. The SIU met with the UIF on the 11th of February to discuss the DC process. The SAU is considering a further 2 DCs involving senior UIF officials. Under the issue of criminal referrals, no criminal action will be referred at this stage. The SAU is still in the process of verification of the lifestyle audits of all the staff members that were involved. And under civil litigation, the SAU's civil litigation branch will determine whether the SAU should commence with litigation against all 5 companies. Thank you, Leonard. Now we are going over, Honourable Chair, to matters investigated under the secondment agreement. The secondment agreement effectively works in the manner that the SIB members are taken to the department, and due to the lack of resources to investigate, the SIU then entered into it. So the secondment agreement was entered into between the Department of Employment and Labour and the SIU on the 5th of September 2002. The Temporary Employment Relief Scheme benefit, the AGSA made a commitment to the President to assist government in dealing with the financial management risks posed by the emergency measures taken due to the outbreak of the global coronavirus pandemic. So based on the above mentioned, the AGSA focused on COVID-19 related account balances and classes of transactions and compliance with key legislation applicable to the COVID-19 related transactions, funds, and processes. Thank you, sir. So on the TERS expenditure, so to date, a total of 13,447,000 and 6 employees received TERS payments or benefits from the UIF. These employees were linked to 1.1 million companies or employers, and a total of 57.3 billion were paid out by the UIF since inception of the scheme to date. Thank you, Leonard. So now we're looking at the key observations made by the AGSA versus the action that the SIU is really taking, have taken, or will be taking going forward, considering that our secondment is still carrying on until the 14th of May. So under the ID number, same as UIF employees, these are the key observations made by the AGSA. The SAU will be investigating this under the secondment. The deceased individuals that were paid by or paid with TERS benefit, the SAU issued a letter to Home Affairs, and we are currently waiting the outcome of this request. And number three, individuals who are in prison were paid benefits by the TERS or UIF. Letters were issued to DCS. We are still waiting the outcome of this request. Then there was an issue about double derping. This will be investigated under this convent. Bank detail famous UIF employees will be investigated under this convent as well. Then number six, individuals sharing banking details. We will be investigating this matter under the proclamation, because there we specifically need our powers to serve notices on the banks. Individuals with invalid ID numbers, we will be investigating this matter under the convent. Payments above the maximum threshold, once again, we will investigate this under the proclamation. The overpayments will also be investigated under the proclamation. Underpayments, that's the same situation there. Thank you, Leonard. As you'll see, at the total of 29 key observations were made by the AGSA, we are now at number 11, which talks to duplicate payments, and that will be investigated under the secondment. The unsubstantiated payments that were made will be investigated under the proclamation. Unsubstantiated applications submitted under the proclamation. Payments to foreign nationals will also be done under the proclamation. Applicants that are below the legal age of employment will be done under the proclamation. This one, Leonard, please. Then 16, the lack of consideration of salary portion paid by employer in the calculation of payouts for first lockdown period. This will be investigated under the proclamation. The lack of verification of employee salaries submitted during the benefit, again under the proclamation. Claims with an applicable date after the payment date, an application date after the payment date will be under the proclamation. Employer verifications under the proclamation. And claims with no application date or approval date will be done under this secondment. Fraud risk related to the manual application process will be done under the proclamation. Fraud risk related to the manual and online application process, once again. So everything on this slide will be done under the proclamation, so I'll just read the items on the left. Incorrect system calculations of the TERS benefit payments for the first lockdown period. Number 24, inadequate controls to verify employer details. And then 25, lack of controls to verify of applicants representing employers. Next one, thank you. Then number 26, inadequate system functionality to utilize bank information uploaded on the system to verify banking details. Number 27, non-compliance with the instruction note. Number 28, discrepancies relating to the appointment of the service providers, again under the proclamation, and the unfair awarding of the contracts, and these are these matters that we investigated under proclamation R23 of 2020. Thank you, Leonard. So, the government agreement dated 5 September 2020 followed on the focused on the following as an interim. So we focused on government employees with personal numbers claiming from the relief fund, SANDF staff claiming from the fund, inmates claiming from the fund, and then deceased individuals claiming from the fund. Thank you. So, under the UIF data, the secondment team initially experienced some challenges with the data from the UIF due to incompatibility with the SIU databases and systems. To mediate this, the SIU relied on the data provided by the AGSA during their audit process. The SIU subsequently received all the required data from the UIF for further analysis and verification. So a lot of data mining has been done and analysis on the data that we are currently have in our position, which we are currently dealing with under the secondment. Yes, Leonard, thank you. So status of the secondment investigation, the team obtained a high-level understanding of some of the processes adopted by the UIF relevant to the TERS benefit by interviewing several officials from the UIF. The team collected valuable information which still needs to be tested. Progress was made on the identified four focus areas will be discussed as follows. So, first of all, we looked at 78 exceptions relating to the SANDF. And these exceptions amounted to 327,638 rand. According to the data, a total of 59 SANDF members were identified as recipients of the TERS. The data reflected that 55 bank accounts were used to transfer the funds, meaning that three accounts have multiple beneficiaries and four SANDF members had multiple bank accounts. A letter to the Secretary of Defense was issued on the 23rd of October requesting information on the 59 SANDF members. To date, we have interviewed over 30 SANDF officials. We continue with that specific exception on SANDF. Several members were interviewed and they acknowledged that they received payments that they were not entitled to and were willing to repay back these monies. The investigation is continuing to ensure that the money is paid back to the UA. Some members were unaware of the first payments made to them and alleged that their details were fraudulently used, i.e. companies and at a specific church, who later confirmed receiving payment on behalf of their congregants. This investigation is continuing to ensure that all the money not owed are paid back to the UA. Thank you, Leonard. Some members who received payments are no longer in the employ of the SANDF. In some instances, members who own businesses and all who perform part of jobs admitted submitting claims to the UIF, i.e. a member of a catering business, and a member, in brackets a doctor, working part-time at a clinic. The team compiled a database with all the related information for follow-up investigation. The next one, thank you. Inmates, which relates to seven exceptions. So seven inmates were identified to be claiming from the relief fund, totaling 40,657 rand and 90 cents. A letter from the Acting Commissioner, which was issued to the DCS on 23 October 2020, was issued. Communication with DCS on this matter is ongoing, and follow-ups will be made with DCS. Deceased individuals, 68 exceptions. So deceased individuals who were paid to his benefit totaling 441,144 rand and 34 cents, which represents 68 deceased beneficiaries making use of 72 bank accounts. Furthermore, two bank accounts depicted multiple beneficiaries and seven deceased beneficiaries had multiple bank accounts. A letter was issued to the DG or the Department of Home Affairs requesting the information. The team is following up with the department on the required information. Thank you, Leonard. Government officials have 6,140 exceptions. So of the 6,140 officials claiming from the fund, totaling 41,009,000 rand, 773 rand and 70 cents, making use of 3,959 bank accounts. Of these 3,959 bank accounts identified, 580 accounts were associated with multiple, in brackets, 3,079 beneficiaries. 55 beneficiaries were identified with no bank accounts, relating to at least 301,000. Thank you, Leonard. So we continue with this exception. Analysis of the data received from the AGSA report, UIF data and personal data is ongoing. Analysis so far identified several false positives. For example, contract teachers laid off during COVID-19 lockdown. So we are currently engaged in the Department of Education on that, and they are the predominant figure within that 6,140, looking into that matter. The investigation is ongoing under the secondment, and until the proclamation is issued, the secondees will communicate with the Department of Education and other government departments to retrieve data relating to the beneficiaries. Thank you, Leonard. So the arrest made by the wards. The SIU was alerted on the 22nd of October that 11 suspects were arrested relating to fraud perpetrated against the UIF. The information as depicted in the next slide shows the arrest made. The secondees are working closely with the wards to ensure that the AFU is brought on board to assist in recovering all the ill-gotten gains by these companies. Thank you. So here's a list of the case numbers as well as where the cases are registered and the amounts involved and whether those amounts have been recovered and as well as how many people were arrested on each case number. So we start off with case number 82/07/2020, which is a Pretoria Central case number. There was 4,804,000 rand claimed here, and the UIF already recovered 4.7 million of this. And in this instance, one person was arrested. Under case number 274 of May 2020, which was registered in the Brooklyn Police Station, the matter is set down for trial on the 26th of January 2021. That related to 5.6 million. No money has been recovered yet. We are working closely with the officer involved in the asset forfeiture unit until such time as the SOT property can be signed. And in this instance, they've arrested five individuals. Under case number 81 of July 2020, it's a Pretoria Central case. The matter will appear on the 27th, or did appear on the 27th of January 2021 for disclosure. That is related to 692,000 rand, and three suspects have been arrested. The matter relating to case number 11 of September 2020, there's a matter in Polokwane. They're waiting for more information. This relates to 3.1 million rand, and there one person has been arrested. And in the case of case number 234 of May 2020, that's a Sandton matter. The Hawks are still waiting for more information, and that relates to 128,000 men. One person has been arrested. So you'll see there, the potential actual loss in this instance was 14.4 million, and that's only on five matters, and the recovery at this stage is 4.7 million, so we're looking at least 9.8 million that can still be recovered in this instance. Thank you, Leonard. So cases are currently under investigation by the SCCU in Pretoria. So a total of 70 criminal cases were registered with the SACS and currently under investigation by the Special Commercial Crimes Unit of Pretoria. As we understand, no arrests have been made in relation to these matters yet. These 70 matters related to 1.4 million rand. The SIU is working together with all law enforcement agencies and the Fusion Hub on these matters. The SIU is assisting the police with all the available records in order to speed up the criminal investigation. This includes packaging and providing information received from the UIF. These are one of the issues that we wanted to focus on to ensure that these matters get to court and that they are prosecuted successfully and that money is being recovered from the individuals identified in those 17 matters. Thank you, sir. Now we have a last matter, which is the Labour Activation Program, which is commonly referred to as a LAP. Here we also have a secondment agreement. Thank you, Leonard. So another secondment agreement was entered into with the Department of Employment and Labour and the SIU. Allegations received relate to CFS ballot administration and alleged corruption by officials within the LAP division and service providers. The secondment commenced on the 1st of February 2021 and will terminate on the 23rd of April 2021. Or upon the publication of a presidential proclamation. Once again, in this instance, we are gathering as much evidence as we can so that we can motivate to the president for a proclamation. Thank you, sir. And then I believe this will be the last slide. The progress to date on the LAP is that we had several meetings now with the commissioner, the acting CFO, and the acting chief of director at the LAP. We are profiling all the role players of the matters that we are looking into. We are lifting vast amounts of documentation because there are many contracts involved in this, and we have already commenced with the review of these documents. Thank you, Lena. I thank the committee and the chairperson, and thank you for listening to my presentation.
Okay, now, thank you. Thank you, through you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Mr. Leroux. Honorable Chair, if you allow, I really just want to take the Honourable Committee back to the slides that deal with the key audit observations made by AGSA and what SIU is and will be doing. From slide 25, Mr. Lotato. Honourable Chair, I do this so that we give the Honourable Committee the assurance that the reason why we dissected what the observations of the AGSA are and what it is that SIU needs to do, it was with a view that we very determine how quickly we can move while still awaiting the proclamation to be published. And as I said earlier on, the secondments also assist us to achieve the same purpose. The thing that we will not be able to do under secondment, for example, is to issue subpoenas, which we can only do once the proclamation is published. For example, we can't subpoena bank statements, we can't subpoena witnesses. But of course, where witnesses cooperate with the which we do not have a doubt that within the department, if we need to see a certain witness, there should be a cooperation, work with the DG in that regard. So we will be able to go on and get traction with the investigation, even under secondment. It's only few areas which will probably not be able to do because the proclamation has still not been signed. And let me just quickly go through slide 25. I think it's all right. It shows that we will do most of those under secondment, which means the work has started. The secondment agreement, I'm glad that the department and DG in particular has agreed that we proceed further with the secondment agreement, because that is going to help us not to waste time waiting for the proclamation. The second slide, I think there's an opportunity. While I looked at this after the team gave it to me yesterday, while in their view was that the proclamation has to be issued, but I will re-engage with them. Most of these items we can do under the secondment. For example, individuals sharing banking details. That is a question of going through the evidence at the department and determine the extent to which individuals are sharing details. If there's a need to interact with those individuals, then we will attempt to do so still under secondment. For areas where we will need to exercise our powers, of course, we will then take that through the proclamation. Payments above the maximum threshold, that is a question of assessing the payment details, payment information at the department or the UIF. The secondment team should be able to do that. Overpayments, for example, we should be able to determine that through assessing and looking at the payment information. So Honorable Chair, just to assure the committee that we will make sure that all of these items, there's very few of them that we cannot do. And Honorable Minister, I also want to assure you that this will be revised. But of course, in the interest of making sure that we push the investigation quite quickly without affecting its quality outcome and without causing legal risk. We are not causing legal risk at all if we do it under secondment, because it's provided for in the SIU Act. Duplicate payment on slide 27, for example. It's a question of going through the payment details. So I will not go through each and all of them, but I've marked them up. I couldn't meet the team before we presented today, but I can assure the committee that most of this we will convert them to be done under the secondment, and then be able to do them as quickly as possible, as I say, without affecting quality of investigation and without undergoing any legal risk. So I'll work closely with the team to ensure that we do that. I just wanted to give the committee this assurance that while of course we will wait for the proclamation, but the work will continue to be done. And when the proclamation is signed ultimately by the President, we will then of course incorporate the work of the secondment team into the proclamation and just check which ones are the aspects that are still remaining
that required SIU to use its powers to dive deep into any of the aspects. I thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity. That is our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate and your team, for taking us through. Honorable members, there is the presentation and also some commitments that have been put before us by Advocate and your team. Any takers?
Yes, Madam Chair, Michael Bagram.
And who is next?
Michael Cotto.
And next? Dana, please, Chair.
Mkhonto, Chair.
And who's next? I got some messages that members are being gave. We're being kicked out on and off by the network challenges. But I'm also understanding that they can listen through their phones, and I hope the comment section has assisted them on that. Honorable Bacon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it, and thank you very much for that assessment. I just got a couple of comments, and maybe they can give me some answers on it. The first one is that the proclamations themselves seem to be quite narrow. I'm hoping that at some stage the proclamations are either opened up so we can have a full and proper investigation, because as was said by the presentation, that it's very narrow. That's the first thing. The second thing is, it's quite clear, even from the narrow investigation, sorry, someone else is talking, maybe they should mute themselves.
Can Zolani, who is stepping in the meeting?
I'm checking, Chair, who is not muted.
It's only myself that is not muted, and Honourable Baker. The rest I'm not expecting to be muted.
Okay. Right, may I go ahead, Madam Chair?
Yes, you can proceed.
Okay, thank you. So it's quite clear that these problems, even with the narrow investigation, absolutely right. In other words, the UIF systems were rotten to the core, and maybe they should actually be giving us some advice as to how to stop the rot.
Sorry. That's something that I didn't check. There are people, I don't know whether Musa and Telo a part of SIU. Musa and Kelu, who are they, Zolani? Zolani?
Yes, sir, I'm using Musa. I don't know Musa and Kelu.
Can you tell us who is he? Or she? And if he's not prepared to identify himself, we'll take him out. Who's Mr. Pelo? And Musa? I think Musa...
Musa is with the department. Yes. Musa is with the Department of Employment and Labor in the Communications Department.
And Pelo?
He says... In the chat, hi, I'm with SAFM.
You must tell us. Okay, SAFM and the department, okay. Who is the producer of the current affairs? Oh, okay. Alright, sorry, Mr. Baker, you may...
No, not a problem. You quite right what you did. Just quickly to say, so that the second point I was making is the problems are, even within the narrow investigation, are absolutely rife. And I was saying that the UIF systems are rotten to the core. They have been for years, but now we can see them all come out. That rot is now starting to stink. And maybe they want to comment on how we could try and start looking at it. number, point number three I want to make is that most of this theft and fraud had to have internal help, and we need to track down all the internal people within the department, within the UIF, that have helped so that they get prosecuted as well. Point number four, the suspension of the top management took place months ago. They're receiving their full salary. We don't hear anything about them at all. Are they to blame? Are they part of this? Did they have their fingers in the till? What is going on? Why are they still earning their salaries? It's a dangerous situation, so the top management need to answer. And then finally, I've got lots more, but finally on this particular round, where does the buck stop? Is the DG just as guilty for allowing the rot to actually stink right through the system when he'd been warned all along, not only by me but many others? And is the minister now liable as well? Maybe we should look at whether the minister never ever took his hand off his heart and had a look at this property. He knew that there was failure. The workers of South Africa had been failed by the UIF, and this is a real problem. So thank you for listening to me.
Honorable Kato.
Thank you, Chair. I have two questions. The first one is, to what extent were the weak financial controls that enabled this fraud and corruption a product of deliberate design? And what evidence, if any, has the FIU found of UIF officials facilitating or aiding and abetting this fraud and corruption? And in connection with that, have you interviewed any members of the top management at the UIF who have been placed on suspension? And then secondly, I'm particularly interested in the 6,140 government employees who were identified as claiming illegally from the TERS fund to the tune of 41 million rand. You note in one of the slides that some of these cases are what you refer to as false positives, mostly contract teachers. I wondered if you could put a number to that. How many of the 6,140 government employees were false positives, sort of contract teachers? And what is being done to reclaim this money? Surely in the case of government employees with personal numbers, it should be relatively straightforward to get that money back. What is being done in this regard? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Jay, and good morning, everyone. I apologize for logging in a few minutes late. I had connectivity problems. Madibi, thank you for the presentation. I just have a few questions. The first one is about the awareness campaign. Mr. Leroux mentioned that there would be there are lifestyle audits being planned. I'd just like to know what the process is around that and the timeline, and on specifically who these lifestyle audits will be done. And then secondly, I refer to slide 38, deceased individuals. And Ms. Leroux also mentioned that information has been requested from the Department of Home Affairs. I'd like to know if there is good cooperation from this department and whether the information has been received, because it seems that the information has not yet been received, and that seems to hold up the investigation. Secondly, also referring to cooperation from departments, has there been any liaising with the Department of Public Service and Administration? I think about their drive to restore moral fibre in the public service, and then of course the 6,140 government officials who have claimed from TERS. So I'd like to know if there is any cooperation with regards to that. And then on slide 42, recovered by the UIF, 4.7 million, and the potential actual loss of 14 million. I'd like to know what is being done. Are there any plans to recover the about 10 million that has not yet been recovered? And then my last question, and it was partially covered by Honourable Bagram, but ultimately the buck stops with the Minister of Employment and Labour. And I would like to know what his plans are to tighten controls going forward to see to it that something similar to what we have been seeing now does not happen again. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Dana. Honourable Nkonto.
Good morning, Chair. Thanks very much for the opportunity. Good morning, Honourable Members, Advocate in TV, and his team. I agree that the scope for the investigation is narrow. Because when I did my constituency work in the farms during December, seemingly there are farmers who claimed from TEP and using their workers' ID numbers, but they did not give those workers the money. And above all, even the workers themselves did not qualify. So I'm just qualifying the fact that maybe the scope of the investigation should be a little bit extended, Chair. I have a question, Chair, to Advocate TV as to the prisoners that benefited from the UIF. During their investigation, are the prisoners aware of what has happened, or their names were just used to claim? Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any other hands? Any other questions? Question.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the report. Let me thank also the SIU for helping us to get clarities and updates on the progress with regard to investigations made. But just generally, Chair, it looks like more still a work in progress, as Advocate Mutibi has just outlined, that there is still a number of areas that needs to be followed up. But I just needed to help myself understand the logic here. In the earlier amount of the cases that has been taken to court, you would find that some of the amounts, they in fact even are far lower than a million. And then there is the case of the five service providers, which is almost 6.1 million, and which so far is not yet taken to courts. And yet the report indicates that even those involved, both within the department and outside, are in fact known. I just could not follow through the logic of not proceeding with prosecutions in this specific one. And maybe if Advocate Mutibi can just help clarify. I'm not saying why, for instance, we do not have strong case to take to court, we should just follow that to court. But it just sounded odd. Where you have people already identified, and with an amount that is quite almost 6 or 7 times more than the amount, some of the amounts that are constituting that 14 million that has been identified and taken to court, and yet with this amount of 6.1 million, these five people have not yet been taken to court, whereas there is absolutely no progress even with regard to the hearing, internal hearing and so on. No criminal action taken and no civil and so on. Maybe if you can just clarify me, as I'm saying, Chair, I'm not insisting that there should be exit, where there could validly be no strong grounds for us to proceed with that regard. But just to get much more clarity on that, thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. If there are no other hands, can we just, from my side, Advocate and Mr. Leroux, is that one? If these people who were arrested, are they arrested? Are they still in jail or they are out on bail? I know there's that one of that family in Pretoria that was out on bail. And if you can clarify to me, it was this crime is very serious, or it depends on the courts on the issues of them given bail and the amount of bail that they are paying, which I think is very low for when they have been committed this crime. The second one is the South African National Defence Force that have agreed to pay back the money. Which category? I will ask them. There are those that said, in fact, there are those that said they were not aware. And then they will have to pay back that money. There are those that they saw the money, but they didn't say anything. Are they paying back that money on their terms? Or they are just told, I make an example, if somebody was paid 50,000, just an example, that person is to pay that money on the terms that have been put up by yourselves, or it depends on if a person is taken to court or whatever. I'm raising these things because, these questions, because if then conditions are very much lenient, people will continue. I'm from public service, that there will be people who will see at the time. There will be people who will see money paid to their accounts and quickly use it without first inquiring. And when they are to pay it back, they go and negotiate. That can I pay 200 rand a month? Whereas when a person saw that money, he or she didn't go and say, this is not my salary, I see that. So I'm just making that because it's something that it continues in the public service in different formats. But now we're talking about theft, and that they have defrauded money, have defrauded a system in this most challenging times of the pandemic, is paying back dependent on them, or they are to be. And if then it is dependent on them, as SIU, don't you see that thing needs to change? I think that is a, those would be my questions. If there are none, can we then in this round, can we allow then the advocate to be Mr. Leru to respond? How you respond, who responds, when, depends on you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. I will respond to the questions and then identify those that Mr. Leroux and, of course, Mr. Lachetov, who in investigation is going under his monitoring, if he's got responses to give. Honorable McRae, we will undertake to just make sure that the proclamation that we have submitted covers all the aspects that we should cover under the UIF or CHESS payment. We have ensured that all the aspects identified in the Auditor General's report and those that we have observed during our secondment investigation that are covered in the proclamation that we have submitted, which is now at the Department of Justice. We would very much like to make sure that no aspect of this investigation is left unattended. So just to assure the committee, the team will again just review the proclamation and ensure that before the Minister of Justice signs it, before it goes to the President, ensure that the scope is as wide as possible so that we don't keep on going back, you know, to the President to amend the proclamation, you know. Because what happens if we are busy investigating under the proclamation and we find that other aspects are not covered, then we must go back and amend the proclamation so that we cover those. We want to avoid that so that it is as wide as possible from the onset. In terms of the URF system, whether there's inefficiencies, in the process of this investigation, yes, the team will determine if there are any inefficiencies in the system. And the point I made when I was dealing with the outcomes of SIU, at the bottom there, the systemic recommendations, we will make any systemic recommendations that the team pick up so that we can submit them to the department and ensure that they understand and can bring those improvements. We need to track down the internal people, indeed. Indeed, like we did with those initial matters that we investigated, the awareness program where we have identified almost seven officials internally, we will continue to do so, even under secondment, so that internal people, because what we do is that we look at the whole process and who then was involved in all of this payment process, including from the time of submission. If this was any fraudulent submission, we need to detect it there. Whoever looked at it internally, processed it to payment, we will look at all of that. And all the people internal will be identified. Top management suspended since last year. I think on this regard, I'm sure the Director General can possibly respond, but we are of the view that where there's action to be taken, it needs to be taken as quickly as possible, of course, informed by the evidence that has been found. I had the honourable members asking what the Minister will do to improve. Can I leave this to the honourable Minister? I'm sure he can probably appraise the committee. Honourable Ricardo, to what extent financial inefficiencies have been picked up? Yes, I think in the process we will of course look at those in financial irregularities and financial inefficiencies. We will indeed interview any senior manager or senior management, all the top management, whether they are still at work now or under suspension. And perhaps this is where Mr. Leroux make a note. When you come in, then you just appraise the committee if the secondment team has already interviewed any of the suspended top officials or not. We identified the 6,140 government employees. I was informed by the team that they've got the list, but this is one of the questions, Mr. Leroux, if you can just make a note, respond to that, and how many false positives, what has been done to recover. As a matter of course, if there's any recoveries in the, firstly, we make a finding that if there was incorrect or unlawful payment, the natural consequence is that there must be a recovery. Right? And the recovery is done based on, you know, identifying those who have been paid illegally, or we approach them, we ensure that they sign, there are legal processes that we follow. And this is what the team is also doing, particularly in the SANDF, but it applies in all instances where there's been unlawful payment. We will ensure that there is legal instruments that are signed If it's an acknowledgement of debt, it's signed and it's monitored until payment. Where there is a need for full-scale civil proceedings, we also determine. And that is why Mr. Leroux indicated in one of the slides that the civil litigation branch of the SIU will decide on that based on the on the process that needs to be followed. Honorable Dana, awareness campaign, lifestyle audit, assist individuals is the cooperation from the Department of Home Affairs. Mr. Leroux, please, if you can just respond to this one, the extent to which we are doing a lifestyle audit on who and are we getting cooperation. Has there been interaction with the DPCSA, Department of Public Service and Administration? The answer is yes. I have had a meeting and interaction with the Director General of the Department of Public Service and Administration. Firstly, they are really wanting to ensure that from the department's perspective, they deal with employees doing business with the state, but in our investigations, we come across all of those quite often. But in this instance, they were entrusted to identify all of those members of the South African National Defense Force, or all of those members who are in the other departments who received the payment from UIF, and they were not due. They were not qualifying to be paid. So we are in the process, and Mr. Lefetre is interacting with the officials at DPSA to ensure that process. We contribute the necessary information to the Department of Public Service and Administration. Are there any plans to recover? Slide 42. Indeed, wherever there's any unlawful payment or illegal payment, we will ensure that we kickstart the process to recover those monies. Again, as I said, we will then determine which one would be the appropriate legal process to follow. In instances where people admit, and more often, if we have traced this money, you know, there's little room for a person not to admit. People produce evidence. Where the people admit, the quick process would be either immediate repayment or an acknowledgement of debt, where we then register it in their name, and we've got timelines for payment. Failing which, we then ensure that we kickstart the process for collection, and where appropriate. By the way, in all of these processes, if there's anyone who is guilty of a criminal offence, we then ensure that we pursue those criminally as well. In many instances, if we check whether there was awareness on the part of an individual, if he or she was aware that he received unlawful payment, what did they do? What is expected of them by law to do, and if they fail, why did they fail, and then we can decide whether we kickstart the criminal proceedings by referring to the NPA. What are the minister's plans to tighten controls? As I said, for the minister, I'll leave that to the honourable minister. Honourable Mponto, excuse me, the question of the scope of the investigation, we've taken that. We will ensure, Honourable Mponto, that we review. We've got the documentation internally that informs the proclamation based on the engagement with the Honourable Committee today. Particularly, there's a reference to the farmers. Excuse me. There's a reference to the farmers. We'll make sure that that part is not left out. But as I said, we will ensure that the scope covers the whole business area of UIF payment shares in the context of dealing with the COVID-19. The prisoners that benefited, are the prisoners aware, or their names have just been used? Mr. Leroux, if you can please just respond to that. Honourable Ntele, yes indeed. Honourable Ntele, the observation is correct.
This is still very much work in progress, and we really look forward to interacting with the department, with the minister, particularly with the honorable committee, to give the committee update of where we are, either on the times that the committee will determine. Today, we have just presented and indicated that there's a whole number of matters that we still need to look at. Yes, on the next occasion, we should be able to make a progress report. Proceedings with the prosecution, I'm going to request Mr. Leroux to really apply his mind on this one and respond. Where we have identified people, especially in those amounts that have been paid, why is it that there's no prosecution? But let me also make this point, that in those matters where we have referred to MPA working with the Hawks, as Mr. Leroux indicated, we do provide information in the criminal process, investigation process, to ensure that all of those are taken into account. And we really engage with MPA and Hawks to ensure that the prosecutions follow, or a decision is made to prosecute based on the information that we have submitted. So we'll continue to do that, but Mr. Leroux, if you are aware of any information around that, can you appraise the committee or tell it to, then we'll have to write back to the committee so that if we don't have information, please indicate so that we can get back to the committee in writing on that. The people that have been arrested, Honorable Chair, are they still in bail or in jail? Mr. Leroux, if you are aware of that aspect, please indicate. If they are on bail, what is the amount of the bail? We'll indicate that. SANDF members that have agreed to pay, were they aware? Are they going to pay? Yes, Honorable Chair, we've got a list of all the SANDF members that have received payment, and the team is already engaging. Some of them have agreed to repay, and we will ensure that that agreement is reduced to a legal document that will bind them, so that we monitor those payments. Is the payback dependent on them? The answer is no. Otherwise, as you correctly say, Honorable Chair, we'll be sending a wrong message if we leave it to the people to just decide whether to pay or not to pay. Where we determine that there was no legal base for payment, that it was not due and payable to them, it is then paid to them unlawfully, they have to pay back. Then we'll kickstart the legal process to ensure that it's documented legally to get them to pay. But I'm going to just pause here and hand over to Mr. Leroux and, of course, Mr. Lefetre, if there are any questions that they need to respond. I've indicated specifically, Mr. Leroux, if you can please just kick off with those that I've indicated to you, and if you need to add on. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Advocate, and once again, thank you, Chair, for allowing me. I just want to address the issues that Advocate Matibi then identified that I should address to the committee. On the issue of Honourable Carter's question around did we interview the senior staff, yes, we did. We interviewed, you'll remember that our referral letter for the DCs involved at least 7 people, and some of them ranged from very senior on a chief director level up to the level of assistant manager or assistant director, but however, 2 very senior people within the department were also interviewed, and we are currently looking at formulating evidence or disciplinary referrals depending on the evidence that we have. Out of the 6,150 false positives, or out of the 6,150 matters, we indicated that there were some false positives. We will go back to our data and ensure that we do a proper account of how many false positives were identified, so I'll go back to the team and ensure that we do that proper calculation. Under the question of Honorable Denner about the awareness campaign and the lifestyle audit, yes, we are currently working very closely with the Fusion Center, and we are doing those lifestyle audits, so it's important for us to understand whether there were any gratifications or benefits received as a result of contracts awarded to suppliers. So that information is still ongoing and that investigation is still proceeding. Are we getting cooperation from the UIF? Yes, we are getting good cooperation and cooperation from the Department of Home Affairs. Yes, we are. We are currently meeting or setting up meetings with some of the senior staff to ensure that we get that information as quick as possible. On slide 42, there was an issue about the 4 million rand recovery. Yes, we are considering making those recoveries. Obviously, that will also depend on the proclamation, as the head of the unit said, and we will then proceed with the recoveries on that process. Under the issue about Honorable Makotu, it's related to the prisoners. Do the prisoners know about that? We haven't had the opportunity due to various or obvious reasons to interview those prisoners at this stage, so we're still interacting with the Department of Correctional Services. And we haven't, but it's certainly within our scope to interview those prisoners to ensure whether they, or to determine whether they've received any money or not. The chances are great that those details may have been falsely used, and obviously it is important that we go and verify that as an investigative agency. The issue about the Honourable Montele relating to the court charges, and yes, this, I assumed that the Honourable Montele discussed the issue about the 5 matters relating to the awareness campaign. As I indicated in our presentation, is that we are still doing the lifestyle audits, and when we find any evidence of collusion or corruption, we will certainly make those referrals to the police, and they will then take the matter from there. Let me just give you some progress on the disciplinaries. You'll know that we've issued that disciplinary referral on the 11th of December. A lot of work was done by the department, and we are very impressed with the work that has been done by them to get those disciplinaries ongoing. I've received the information last week late when I met with some people in the department dealing with the disciplinaries that it will commence this Friday, and it will run through to next week on all 7 officials, depending on the availability of the officials, or if anything comes up like issues relating to COVID-19 quarantine issues or something like that. But please be rest assured that we are certainly monitoring that process very closely, and we will certainly give progress to this committee in our next opportunity. And then the Chair requested an answer on the issue about the bail. To be honest with you, Chair, I have not personally asked the AUX about the bail. I am going to go back to the lead investigator of the AUX and ensure that I get that detail for you, so that we see whether those people are on bail or not, and what the amounts were that they were asked to pay bail. And yes, then on the next opportunity, we'll certainly update the committee on those matters. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Leroux. Minister, do you want to respond to some of the questions that the advocate said you will then request your office to respond on them, or the DG? Can I...
Yes, Chairperson, I will request the DG, if he's here, to also respond. But maybe I must just respond on one issue which has been raised by Honorable Bakren and Benet. I thought Chairperson, our input is only required on Wednesday when the department and the UIF reports on the status of the suspension and other debated matters and all the stuff. I thought that those issues will be raised to us, but I think it's important that members also make a distinction. on the one hand, the minister is ultimately politically accountable. And I emphasize politically accountable for the policy direction and oversight of the department and its entity. Then this needs to be distinguished from the operational responsibility for the day-to-day operations of the department, its branches and units and entities. The minister, and that's my belief, would not be and cannot be expected to be aware of every action taken at every level of the organization. Indeed, Jefferson and honorable members, the PFMA specifically limits and constrains the role of the minister in relation to the financial and the procurement transaction. So it's fair and reasonable that the minister also accounts for the policy of the department, and where these are not fit for purpose, he must also be able to demonstrate and follow the proper processes. So, but I thought that as we would be presenting our report, because this is an SIU report, we'll be able to answer any related question, including such questions which have been raised by the members. And they would even be able to brief on how far are we with the suspension processes and how far are we in relooking, restructuring or turning around the UIF, as there was a lot which was pointed to us, and the issue of the control. But the mistake which we must not make, as honorable members, is to maybe paint everybody with the same brush, to say the whole UIF is rotting when millions of workers have been able to receive some money. It would be a bit unfair. But of course, we must deal with those rotting areas or those rotting individuals in the system. But to paint everybody with one brush might also be dangerous. I'm not sure if the DG is here can also be able to respond, or Marsha from the UIF.
DG, Marsha, any of you?
But I was, initially I was told that he had gone to the doctor, the DG might join us today. I'm not sure if he's already here. Sorry for that.
No, I'm here, Minister. Thanks. I came back. Good morning. Chairperson, the honorable members, Minister Tier, and my colleagues from SIU. The honorable chairperson, I think the minister pointed out that we would have preferred to respond to a number of questions that have been posed in the session that we're going to have with the committee. However, given the fact that there's a question that was asked with regard to the suspensions, Advocate Mutin is correct in that there's an investigation that is still ongoing, and when we suspended the officials, we said to them we're suspending them pending the outcome of the investigation. Now, The investigation is not yet completed. There are certain areas that have been completed that the SIU has shared their report with us, and they've indicated in this meeting that we are acting on those, hence a reference to the disciplinary processes that are taking place at UIF. And I think the point was made by both Advocate Mutin and Mr. LaRue. So for now, Chair, it suffices to say that the people that were suspended, they remain suspended until the investigation has been completed. We're very much mindful of the obligations and the need for us to comply with Labor Relations Act,
And that is why we interact with the colleagues that are on suspension whenever the 60-day period is about to come to an end. We extend the suspension. Ordinarily, we would have loved to have had them back in the department, but given the nature of the investigation, we decided that we will not even risk redeploying them in certain areas of the department, given the extent of the challenges that were highlighted by both HE and the investigation that that the SIU needs to do. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Members, last round, if there are any questions, hoping that we won't repeat what we've asked initially. By the looks, nobody wants to ask the questions on the second round. Let me then, on behalf of the committee, thank Advocate Mutubi and his team for presenting this their report, which is work in progress. But we still have a responsibility as this committee of ensuring that there is cooperation from other departments, because by the looks there are a number of departments that are involved. Obviously, we want ours is to pursue them, persuade them that they must please cooperate, because at the end, this is what is this UIF is an entity of the Department of Employment and Labor, and will then be expected outside from the public to be seen as doing our work. There's one thing that frustrates me with this for the industrial revolution process of the 20th, is that there is no interpretation. I would have loved that we would have speak on using our vernacular so that people understand that it's not that we are not taking these matters seriously. We are, and the reason that we're taking them seriously is because we are sensitive to their plight, and also we are not taking it kind that this whole process has been defrauded at the most difficult times, when in fact there are people whose life and livelihood has been affected, as government through the president has always been reflecting. And therefore, obviously, it's not going to be the end, Honorable Advocate Mutubi. And yes, we are going to have a meeting to get the entire process of checking what exactly is happening. We are mindful of the fact that we don't want to be seen as interfering with the investigations, but we don't want investigations that are open-ended, because obviously people are suspended with pay. So we must always try to strike that balance of ensuring that these processes are not dragged for almost a year or so, as the experience we have in other areas. Honourable members, I do hope that as the advocate has committed himself, that on page 26 for really picking that up, but also in areas where you said you will check on them and get back on us in writing. We will again we'll give you space to we'll again invite you as the committee will see which day we think it will be appropriate. Obviously, we want exact pressure. We don't we are not expecting you to do work which at the end its integrity is going to be questioned. We have also got that responsibility, but we have got that also of conducting our oversight as members of parliament to ensure that these issues are resolved and people are to take responsibility of their actions. Crime, corruption is a cancer. I think this pandemic has exposed the entire world, the entire country, and also it's exposed that, in fact, it's very sad that everybody, either communities, whether public servants, whether politicians, business people, everybody has been practicing corruption at a time, taking an advantage at a time that is very challenging and sad. When people are losing their lives, their families, others, their livelihoods, there are people who are taking advantage of that, and that can never be accepted, whoever it is, whoever. And I think we must commend the president and his cabinet of ensuring that happens, and institutions of like the SG and the SIU, and hoping that the MPA subs will really come to the party. I know they come to the party, they will come to the party, but they must understand that as ordinary citizens, we are anxious. Yes, they are to follow all the processes so that their work, as I said initially, their work has got an integrity, but it can't be for very long time. That's what makes people not to trust and think that members of parliament, government, the law enforcement agencies are dragging their feet because they are dealing with people that they know. Even if you know that Dundwa has committed crime, deal with Dundwa irrespective of where Dundwa is located. Minister and the DM, thank you very much. Yes, you are correct, Minister, that yours is to come and listen, and we appreciate that. And thank you very much, Advocate Ms. Tobi. We will still come back to you. We will await the information that you said you are then going to provide us. With those few words, our meeting stands adjourned until we meet again tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. That was a very good meeting. Well done.
Thank you.